All right, welcome back to the Dan Time Podcast. I am your host, Dan McArdle. At Dan Time Pod across the socials, dantimepod@gmail.com. You're definitely in the right place today. Another exciting baseball guest for you. His voice makes you want to grab some popcorn, maybe a hot dog or two or three, an ice-cold beverage of your choice, maybe even put on the old glove and pop it a few times, and sit back and listen to the action. It is Curt Bloom time today. My interview with Curt highlights his illustrious run as the longtime voice of the Birmingham Barons, AA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. We talk about our brief run-in many years ago, how he got started in broadcasting, the Hoover Metropolitan Stadium, Regions Field, the unforgettable 1994 season, which featured Michael Jordan in Barons pinstripes, and Curt's special place in history. And you'll hear him describe what it was like to join Lynn Casper in the booth for the Guardians-White Sox game in July 2022. However, and maybe we needed one more hour, Curt's broadcasting experience doesn't stop with the Barons. It only begins there. Curt has covered spring games for the Chicago White Sox, college football for ESPN, Samford University, and UAB football and basketball games. Curt has also sat down and interviewed legends of the game. You can find these videos on his website, curtbloom.com. Raleigh Fingers, Chipper Jones, Doc Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, Lou Piniella, and Justin Morneau. In Birmingham, Curt's presence looms large in the community and has for over three decades. CB, as they call him, he's not just behind the mic, but he's also impacting the lives of children and others in need. In 2013, Curt was honored with an induction into the Birmingham Barons Hall of Fame, joining such larger-than-life icons as Willie Mays, Reggie Jackson, Satchel Paige, and media members Doug Segrest, Mike Rada, Alf Van Hoos, and the 1950s voice of the Barons, Gabby Bell. Curt has also taught broadcast communication courses at Miles College and most recently at Birmingham Southern. He was included in ESPN's 30 for 30 documentary, Jordan Rides the Bus. Be sure to check out his website to find his one-on-one interview with Michael Jordan from that season, plus many other memorable calls. Head over to the Dan Time YouTube channel for the uncut video version of this call. Okay, let's get to the conversation. I said it once before, but let's play two. It is Curt Bloom time. If you call yourself a sports fan, especially if you call yourself a baseball fan, and my gosh, if you live in the Southeast or in Birmingham, Alabama, I think the hairs on the back of your neck are going to be standing up today. My guest this afternoon and the guest for this week is not just a fixture in baseball, in the Southern League, in the White Sox organization, but a fixture in the city of Birmingham. This is Birmingham Barons Hall of Fame broadcaster, Curt Bloom. Curt, I'm probably going to stop my rambling, introduce you, say hey, and then go back to a little more ramble. But, man, thank you for making time to be here on this podcast today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I enjoy somebody else rambling instead of me. So, as the song says, ramble on.
Well, you and I met a long time ago, and I've really been looking forward to saying this part to you today, because I think it's so true in life that a lot of people come across our paths. You talk to somebody at Walgreens for a minute, you talk to somebody at the airport for a minute, and you go about your day and you share a laugh with them. You don't really think about that might be a lasting memory for them. But with you, Curt, and for me, in 2008, I was working at the Birmingham News for a couple of years there, 06 to 08, and had the privilege of filling in for Doug Segrest on a handful of games that season at the old Hoover Met. I don't remember which game it was. I think it was one of those daytime games where you got all the school kids there, and you don't have to pipe in any crowd noise for those afternoons. And I just will never forget the way that you stopped what you were doing. You were so excited, I remember, to just be there at the ballpark in the press box. And you talked to me. You had a meaningful conversation with me, and I always have carried that with me. I remember leaving that day thinking, man, not only is Kurt a great broadcaster, but what a cool guy. And seems like he's actually having fun doing this. You've talked about, I've listened to a few podcasts, and you talk about being 9 years old and having this dream, and you still had that little kid mindset. I remember that day. And speak to that a little bit as a train is going by where I'm...
Well, Dan, all that's a blessing. You know, there's a combination of a blessing and good mentors. The blessing is that when I was 9 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. I was engulfed in sports in the New York area, where we had two sports teams for every sport. We had all professionals. And then later on in life, you get blessed because you have good mentors. And two of them include Terry Francona, Tito, and Bill Hardikoff, who was the president of the Barons and still in town here and still guides me. So, yeah, they taught me a whole lot. I give a lot of credit, my enthusiasm, my passion, and my kindness. I got to give my mom credit for teaching me the right way. She didn't have a whole lot of help. It was a single child in the 70s. And then later on, when I got into pro ball, having influences early in my career like Tito Francona and then my boss, Bill Hardikoff, you know, they taught you how to do things the right way. So I'm thrilled with your remembering and your recall about the time that you filled in for Doug, as I would have kicked myself if I didn't, you know, treat you that way back then, or even if you walked into the press box tomorrow. And again, I've been taught by others, and it's now my time to teach and give back.
Let me ask you a question that maybe you haven't been asked before. So you've been in the organization a long time now. Does it feel like all these years have gone by, or are you still just having a ball and it's like, oh, it's time to go to the ballpark again? The homestand is beginning and I can't wait to get there.
Well, I've been, again, lucky. This is year 37, 33 with the Barons. And every day it's, I can't wait. I can't wait to go. I can't wait to go. You know, when that one day kicks in and it says, I'm done, I'm not excited anymore, then we'll get it changed. And I will tell you this, the longer you're in the game, the quicker the years and the seasons go by. My boss and I, Jonathan Nelson, we've been together 30 some odd years, and it doesn't seem that way. But every year later on, you know, probably maybe around year 8, 9, then it becomes 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, before you even look up. Now you're in the 20s. And, you know, a new anniversary comes up for the Jordan year and all that. So it comes quickly the longer and the older that you stay in. But the base and the fortunate part is that I'm still very enthusiastic and loving what I'm doing.
I have a lot of special memories from the Hoover Met and from Regions Field. I moved to Pensacola the same year that Regions Field opened. So I got to take in a few of those games that season. I've been back over the years and seen a handful of games. But I'll never forget opening day in April of 13, walking up to the stadium and seeing that big Birmingham feature on, I don't know which directional end of the stadium that's on. I thought, this is so cool. This is something the city can be proud of. And then I also heard Kurt Bloom's voice outside the stadium on the pregame show, and I just thought, this is perfect. This is everything. And so going back to what I was saying in the beginning, there's a famous Barons broadcaster from, I guess, the early part or the middle part of the 20th century, who's also in the Hall of Fame. And I should have his name on my on the tip of my tongue here. But when I think of the Birmingham Barons and all the history involved, yeah, you think of the Michael Jordan season. How can you not? But I think of Kurt Bloom. And hopefully people listening and huge White Sox fans that follow the system, they're well aware of you. And I know you're still carving out your legacy. This, your career is still, who knows what's next, but are you proud to be kind of an institution? I don't know if that's the right word, but are you proud of your...
It is. And I think the first broadcaster you're thinking of is Eli Gold. Eli did the Barons at Rickwood Field in the 80s, and of course has become... I had a 30-plus year run with the Alabama football and sports. You know, you first look back on it and you're kind of wary of, you know, am I an institution or just been there forever and all of that stuff. But you really need to take a step back and enjoy it, relish it, appreciate that. And I must be doing, I don't know what it is, but I must be doing something right to be asked to come back year after year. And I think it does start with, again, the passion, the enthusiasm, the energy. I never feel, never sound, never want to be like, man, this is just getting in the way. The last 2 years on the field were tough. They were difficult. But I try to look at it this way. It's 7 o'clock. We got a new game. Let's go. Let's go. We're 0-0 until the first pitch is delivered.
That's a great way to look at it. I got to mention here really, really quick. I learned that you grew up in Westchester County, New York. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, I had a singer-songwriter from Westchester County. He's actually, if you go to his website, Dan Zlotnick, he's the Americana voice of Westchester County. Really cool guy. And when I saw that, I was wondering, well, Kurt may not be aware of him. He's been out of that area for a long time, but I thought that was a cool connection we've had. We now have our second guest from that area.
Westchester is the first suburb north of New York City. If you're in Manhattan, just go north. And for us, we take the train. And then there's the lower part where White Plains is and Yonkers and Scarsdale and Eastchester. And then the upper Westchester where I grew up, it's North Salem. And there's South Salem, Pleasantville, Golden's Bridge, all these beautiful, beautiful little communities, bedroom communities that they're called. And in fact, what has made North Salem, where I went to high school, and Westchester famous is David Letterman has lived there probably 15, 20, 25 years.
Wow. Kurt, when you were a little kid listening to the transistor radio at night and being a Yankees fan, I guess Phil Rizzuto, and those guys, mm-hmm. those were your primary influences that made you think, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I want to be on the radio. I want to be calling these games. I love playing baseball, but I think you said, maybe I'm not at that level, but were there other, did you like TV shows? Did you like something like Johnny Carson or were there other types of announcers?
Well, the broadcasting part of me, like you said, it was a transistor with an earpiece in, listening to Phil Rizzuto, Bill White, and Frank Messer. Especially loved when they were on the West Coast because I stayed up late, even though my mom didn't know that, but you had the ear in and they were playing the Seattle Mariners. The most famous broadcaster and the one that if you are from the tri-state area and if you're anywhere within 20, 25 years of my age, then Marv Albert is your idol. That's the icon. He's my guy. And up until, I believe it was last year, maybe the year before, he finally shut it down with TNT doing basketball. Some have called him the greatest basketball announcer ever. And the funny thing is, as much as I love baseball, that's the only sport Marv really didn't call play-by-play. He was known for his hockey and his basketball with the Rangers and the Knicks. And he would do the Jets at times. He was also the NBC sportscaster. And that was a guy everybody wanted to be. You wanted to be Marv. And now, if you're a little bit younger, you could be his son, Kenny. You could be Kenny Albert.
I remember growing up with Marv Albert, the NBA announcer, and some mm-hmm. of those just really exciting basketball, the late 80s, early 90s, and he was synonymous with that sport in the NBA. I've got a question here. Like I said, I've done a little bit of research, so I want to kind of come at it from maybe a question you haven't been asked before. So your career as a broadcaster started with in Bakersfield, California, 1988, a couple years at Prince William,
mm-hmm.
and then
Prince William Cannons,
mm-hmm. and the year with the Stars. Going back to like 80, what are you doing in, say, 86, 87? How does it lead up to that first break in Bakersfield?
That is, and in 37 years, that's probably the first time I've actually been asked that question. And to put it all together, graduated UNC Greensboro in 85. And immediately went back home to New York and tried to get back into baseball. And like I had a summer fling when I was a freshman with the Greensboro Hornets. And our college radio station actually took over the second half of the year. But a little blip more than anything else. But, so now I spent 2 years trying to find out how do I get back in. And in order to do that, and get a job. I was an adult contemporary radio station DJ. I had the 10 to 2 shift, and it was I knew that it was important to use the voice. If someone calls and asks, what are you currently doing? It's a lot better to say, oh, I've got a radio show versus I'm a mechanic at the local Exxon. And I just, you know, I love listening, or, you know, I just think I can do this thing. So I had about a year and a half, 2 years, where I was an adult contemporary radio DJ, probably from 22 to 24 years old. And then I think the Bakersfield job came when I was about 25.
And then the circumstances that brought you to Birmingham, I remember you said, you know, sometimes jobs just seek you. It wasn't
yes.
like you were saying, wow, Birmingham, Alabama, yep. that's the spot. That's where I want to be. It's just at the time they were looking for a guy with some sales experience. I guess that was important right. for that job description.
Well, to get all people. Four jobs I've had, Bakersfield, Woodbridge, Virginia, Prince William County, and Huntsville, I didn't wake up and throw a dart and go, that's where I want to be. Those were the teams that gave me a chance. Now, when I got to Huntsville, we would drive that long 3 mile journey at the beginning of the parking lot to the Hoover Met. And I'm like, wow, this is a ballpark. And fortunately, after 1 year in Huntsville, the broadcaster with the Barons left. And fortunately for me, I had sales experience. So I told the new, because they just brought in new people, I said, first of all, instead of me sending you a tape, why don't I just come down? We'll have a meeting. You're an hour and a half from me. And I remember Bill Hartikoff said, do you sell? Yes. And he goes, look, that's what we need more than anything else. We're turning this into a full-time position, and you're going to be here selling fence signs, billboard, you know, program ads, tickets, and all that kind of stuff. So that was a major part. If I had said, no, I don't sell, I might not have ever gotten to where I've been. And that was a major part of what I did for the Barons up until approximately 7 years ago, when they turned me into what we call seasonal. So I'm no longer full-time. I had 25 years in the office for 12 months, and now it's seasonal, pick and choose. And then when the games start, you're broadcasting.
I like how you mentioned that, because there may be people that were listening to you in the mid-90s, the early 2000s, and they think that I hear Kurt Bloom on the radio during the game, and that's probably the extent of what he's
right.
doing there. Is a lot more going on.
Well, my value to the Barons in the front office was the opposite, was the off-season, September through March. And to maintain and keep your job, you had to be a good salesman, and you had to bring in income. Okay, the radio guys are a dime a dozen. So for, like I said, 25 years, I was bringing in approximately, let's just conservatively say, $100,000 a year in advertising. So that kept me, you know, that even if I didn't sound good, or if I wasn't a good guy, hey, wait a minute, this guy's bringing in fence signs and program ads. And I knew what it meant. I knew the importance and the significance, especially in that time period. Times have changed again. Most teams, not all, but most probably want just a seasonal guy. You don't have to pay him benefits. You don't have to pay insurance. You just go in, you get paid per game, per month, do the games, and then you're out of there in September.
Well, I want to jump around a little bit. Some of these questions are going over the timeline might bounce around, but I'm kind of excited to talk about this one, because I was rooting for you from afar, or a few hours south in Pensacola, July 24th, 2022. It was just one of those days I was grinning ear to ear when I saw the news. I don't know where I heard about it, but you got the call up to the show to join Lynn Casper in the booth for the Chicago White Sox. And I recall you hearing that you treated it like you were doing a Barons Biscuits game, but I'm mm-hmm. sure this the actual phone call, I'll let you tell it, because it's just such a big moment, and I was so happy to hear that you were getting that moment in the sun. And how was that experience like?
Well, I appreciate you recognizing that. And the funny thing that came out of that is so many people thought it was permanent. My wife's boss and all the people that know my wife they said, "Well, when are you leaving? How come you didn't tell us?" You know, that was probably the fun thing. The White Sox kind of pranked me, and it has to be told that every year for 20-plus years, I asked them before spring training and then middle of the season to come up and do an inning. And earlier, about a month earlier, they set up what I thought was a Zoom conference with all the other affiliates. And instantly I recognized either I'm first or the other guys are not showing up, Charlotte, Winston-Salem, Kannapolis. You know, I knew something was a little different. And he went on to interview me and talk to me and blah, 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 blah. And then said, "What are you doing on July 24th? And I said, "Well, whatever I was doing, I got a feeling I'll be changing plans." So Chris Quintana, his name is, you know, rock my world, change the world. And I tell you that the people who benefited the most were at MLB Baseball with the subscriptions for the MLB app, because they went, you know, they probably sold 100 that day. And then 2 days later, when everyone canceled, they were like, "Hey, what happened?" You know? So, but, you know, I definitely took it as, hey, this is where I belong. This is Barron's Biscuits, Barron's Smokies. The moment was not too big. This is where I want to be. And still, after, as another Paul Simon song, after all these years, we still want to make it happen. And even today, even prior to this recording, I was, you know, working the back door of a couple of situations and a couple of opportunities.
Well, just like the players themselves, there's a lot of guys that I would say don't snooze on them. Don't think that there's not going to be some movement in the next few months, the next year or 2 years from now. I mean, we have loved listening to Kurt Bloom call the Barron's games, but you never know. Enjoy it while it lasts, Birmingham, because you've probably gotten used to Kurt always being the voice of the Barons. But I'm rooting for you, Kurt, to reach the big show and stay there. I think that you deserve to be there, and hope that day comes sooner than rather than later.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate that. It's very kind of you and warm to say that. And I want to recognize that, and I don't just take that for granted. It's an honor. And ultimately, I've learned it's not on my clock anymore. It's on the man upstairs, God's clock. And when he's ready, he'll let me know where and when and what opportunity, and we'll make it happen.
Well, speaking of, I want to just talk about Regents Field for a minute because I was a little conflicted when, not for very long, but I will say that the nostalgia for the Hoover Met, if you attended games as an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, 14, or even 25, you had some great times at that ballpark. Saw a lot of great games, and my gosh, the players that came through there. But Regents Field, going back to that opening day, 2013, I thought, wow, this has got an MLB feel to it. I feel like I'm walking into a Major League Baseball stadium. They really achieved that aesthetic. This is a fun night for families to have an experience on that level.
Well, we've had two incredible ballparks to work with, and technically three, which is Rickwood. But for my broadcasting career, I had 21 years at Hoover Met, and I grew up there. That's where we had my children, and that's where, you know, every day for 21 years, get in a car, you go to the Hoover Met, and come back after a game. So I'll never have anything bad to say, only fond memories. A great big ballpark, that's where I really sharpened my skills. And then 2013, we wind up with this $64 million state-of-the-art facility. And when you're looking right now at the Chattanoogas and the Knoxvilles of the world, Columbus, and these cities are fighting every day to get their ballparks, fighting with government, fighting with politicians. And ours was done. I remember Jonathan coming back to our office in 2012 and saying, "Hey, we're moving next year." Like, "Huh? What?" And it was just like that. So we had one dead year at the Hoover Met, and then 2013 we opened up. And I'll tell you what, the first 3 or 4 years, the magic there was incredible. You just look at our attendance. We led the league in attendance. That opening night you talked about, we had 80, it was more than 8,500, because 85 is what we hold. But there wasn't a Thursday or Friday night that that didn't have 8,000 plus. And that was a lot of fun. And it's funny now because when you look at that actual area, first of all, there's a Buffalo Wild Wings in right field, but the luxury apartment complexes that now drape completely around the ballpark and then behind us as well. So there's just been a lot of building and a lot of migration and a lot of investments that I think the Barons and the mayor and the city, they set the pace and we took it and ran with it.
And Kurt, do they still have the seventh inning tradition with, I know the Children's Hospital overlooks Regions Field and all the fans wave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll never go away. That's Fireworks Friday. And we actually video the kids now. They count it down for us. So we go over to Children's Hospital with our camera. They count it down. We have the big wave. And it's really a sentimental journey and a wonderful reminder every day how lucky, how honored you are. I mean, that's in right center field for me every single game. And then on those Friday nights, the illumination of the elevators, you know, that's where it is their waiting room and the elevators light up. And I know a few parents who have had their children there and they told me how much it means to them. So win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I think there's, I talk about this on the show sometimes, I think there's fewer things that are more rewarding in life than making a child smile. Be happy, feel included, be recognized. So that's just when I read about that, I thought that is something the Barons would do. Mm-hmm. I know you can't see this here. I've got a scrapbook out. I used to, you know, when you were ticket stubs were more common to hang on to, but this is just one of them. This is a 2001 ticket stub, 15-cent wing night.
Yeah.
A long time removed since those days. I don't know if they still do the 25-cent hot dogs. There was the belly
bus. Yeah, we have $2 hot dogs, and we have $2 adult beverages. The dogs are $2 on Tuesday, and the beverages on Thirsty Thursday. So prices have gone up. Inflation will hit us a little bit, but it's still a heck of a bargain. And then on Tuesday nights, I mean, even my front office staff, my press box people, we get hungry and here's $2 and, you know, we're winding up with, you know, a couple of dogs. So we take advantage of that as well.
Okay. Just a little out of bounds question here. So I'm sure people wonder, do you ever get tired of the spread, or do you sometimes just say, look, I got to start bringing some PB&Js here. I got to bring a salad. I got to, do you get tired of the hot dogs or just the cold cuts? I wouldn't.
Well, let me just say, in 37 years of broadcasting and a whirlwind of events, that is clearly the first time I have been asked that question. And I will say emphatically, yes, yes, yes again. It would be cruel to talk about who supplies on what night. But let me just tell you, if you followed me around in the off season, you would not find me at any of the places that we kill during the season. Okay. So now look, we have one of the best spreads in the league. It's just that I can only have so much of that same product, you know, whether it is pizza, chicken, wings, whatever it is. And then, you know, the season ends and your children go, oh, let's go to fill in the blank. I'm like, you got to be. So, and I will tell you, undoubtedly, when I was younger, I could burn calories with the best of them. And as I got older, you realize you do have to keep an eye on what you're eating and doing. And so you will find yourself either grabbing a Chick-fil-A sandwich instead of whatever is, you know, going to be at the ballpark, or bring in something, you know, that you prepared ahead of time. That will come not often, but enough to go, hey, I'm glad I brought this in versus that.
Okay, here's another ticket stub. Thank God I hung on to this thing. July 29th, 1994, I'm going to try try a different lead into this season.
Obviously, that's the Jordan year, and I believe that's the day before his home run. So he homered on July 30th. And you probably don't realize this. I'm looking at my – I've got a copy of it somewhere. You probably don't realize that, but that's a pretty good collector's item.
I'm looking at
They've been going up market. Yeah. Anything from the Jordan year, ticket stubs have really you could turn that into paying for a month of podcasts.
Yeah, I'm just looking, and you know, these must have been printed well before they knew that season was gonna
of course
have the
of
magic.
Course.
And
yep.
$5.50 reserve ticket.
Yep.
$5.50 a Friday night game at the Hoover Met. They don't know Jordan's gonna be there. So that's my lead in. I cannot believe 30 years ago. Wow. I know you've told the story, you've retold it, and I don't want to retread anything that's going to be, you know, mundane for you, but how special is that, looking back and just to be a part of something like that? Michael Jordan in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm in high school at the time. It was a huge deal. There's no internet, definitely no Twitter or social media. When you think back to that season, is it still something you think about all the time?
Daily. It's hard not to. And every anniversary, it expedites even more. So this is the 30th. A lot of our staff members have been interviewed or talked about. Or you see, there's about 5 or 6 of us left. And interestingly enough, we have gotten together once. We did that last year, a group of us. And we went to Regions Field. We had lunch, catered in, and all we did was swap Jordan stories. That's it, every one of us. The first time we've done it, I know one or two guys have talked about, tinkered with a book. I mean, I know I should put my thoughts down in writing before it's too late. But no one, the core group didn't, because we didn't. That's the easiest way to put it. And again, there was no internet and no social, so it was a lot easier to pull off. But when you talk to Bill Hardikoff, Jonathan Nelson, Chris Pica, Ken Dunlop, and Corey Siffer, those names might not mean anything. And then you can go to Tito Francona and Mike Barnett and Kirk Champion. There's a bond, and there is a certain... When you glance at somebody in the eye, you've got that, hey, he was there, I was there, we pulled this thing off. It's kind of like a secret handshake. So when we got together last year, no one outside that room had any clue what we were talking about or could share the stories. And I'll just quickly jump back to when I did the game in Chicago. I don't know if they planned it or not, but it was against the Guardians. It was against Cleveland, and Tito was managing. And so we retold those stories for a few minutes in the Cleveland Guardians locker room. And George Kohler, who was Michael's right-hand man for 30-plus years, George made the trip up. And it was just, we should have frozen time right there and then. And all the stories were rehashed. It's hard to explain to somebody who wasn't there, but if you were there, you know exactly what we went through, and it will always, 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 every single day, you will be reminded about that year. For me, my daughter Chloe was born in August, so how can I forget? If I don't remember how many years it is, I'll just ask what year was, you know, Jordan played here in 94, Chloe was born in 94. I mean, simple as that.
And you guys really had a special responsibility, I would call it, to not just jump all over this guy and be awestruck. You know, you gotta, which I'm sure you had no problem with, just remember, I'm a professional. This is my role with the organization. I don't need to hound him for an interview. I don't need to step out of bounds here. Just, he wants to be treated like the guy that just got called up from Kannapolis. He's taking those bus trips with the guys. Is that right? He's riding the bus. He's not getting his own. I really don't remember.
No, he rode the bus. There were maybe 2 or 3 obligations that he had where he didn't, but 90% of the time he was on the bus. And again, you said it. He just wanted to be like them. He played ping pong with them, played cards with them, played Yahtzee up front with Tito and Barney. And it was amazing how he tried to just blend in.
When the time was right and you had really gained his trust, he did sit down with you for an interview. Mm-hmm. When that time came, because I got to admit, Kurt, I was a little nervous before our interview, but I can't imagine when you know, okay, I'm actually going to be talking to MJ today. Did you have to do some breathing exercises or?
It was one of the few times. I don't think I've written down an interview. I have notes every interview that I do. But that was one that I had questions, not notes, but questions. I couldn't screw it up. You're going to have one choice. And I knew, I mean, my hands were sweating. And you got one. It's like Eminem, you know, you got one shot and make it work. Otherwise, you will see mom's spaghetti. It was in the training room and he called me down. He got on the walkie-talkie system that we used and said, come on down. And then we did 15 minutes. And that interview, I'm so pleased and proud, and somehow through audio, but it's on my website. The whole interview is on the website, the first hit, the first home run. Shameless plug, kurtbloom.com, C-U-R-T. It's all there. And, there's no doubt I was under an immense amount of pressure. The pressure was making sure the tape recorder worked, that I didn't stumble, that I had enough batteries in the tape recorder, everything you could possibly think of. That was my biggest concern, looking at my hands sweating and dripping. So, he was asking questions and I was going like this, just making sure I got the next one out. But I think all in all, it came out pretty well for a, 28, something like that, 28-year-old, something along those lines.
Just in the experience of a lifetime. And, mm-hmm. Michael's playing pretty good ball back then. I mean, if you just focus on the batting average, you're going to get lost in it. I mean, he was a good fielder. He made some good plays in the field. Pretty good base runner, I would say.
Very good base runner. And, 30 stolen bases. Yeah.
And if not for it's the same year as the labor dispute.
Yes.
You take that away, he's probably, I think I heard you say, or somebody else say, he's in Charlotte in 95, most likely, or?
It was Nashville. We didn't have a Charlotte back then. I'm pretty sure, and talking with Tito and Barney, we all think that the progression would have been start the year 95 in Nashville, AAA at the time, and then at some point during that summer get called up to the big leagues. That's probably what would have happened.
But by all accounts, he enjoyed his time in Birmingham. He was having fun playing baseball.
Well, George Kohler, I mentioned George. George was a personal assistant for over 3 decades. And when I saw George again in Cleveland, he said it was by far the most fun they've ever had during a summer. And that was nice to hear. It was quite an endorsement.
Well, Kurt, you got a special place in history there. You'll never forget it. And baseball fans will never forget it as well. Real quick, and we may bounce back to something serious here, but since it is the Dan Time podcast, and man, you've seen so many players through the Barons and the White Sox organization. I'm sure you've had the perspective of see guys come up from high A, play in Birmingham, maybe go back down, maybe you never see them again. You see situations where it doesn't work out for guys, maybe even guys that you've gotten to know a little bit, and they're out of the game, but other guys who have gone off to big careers in the major leagues. How about, for the sake of the Dan Time podcast, I know you mentioned a couple Dans and Dannys that you enjoyed watching. Dan Black played with Birmingham 2013 and 14 seasons, and Danny Mendick, a lot of others that I had listed too, but what are some memories from those Dans?
Dan Black was nicknamed the Bear, and he was the Barons version, the modern day version of Babe Ruth. Dan was not the most in shape guy in the world, but was the most fun loving guy to be around. He enjoyed being Dan, and he was a Dan good ball player as well. He was caught in the system where we had first basemen at every level. He was also very, very smart, very intelligent. So he would go on and, I believe, an engineer and a firm and a really good businessman. But everybody, the front office loved him. He came up to the front office. He was the go-to interview guy. He got it. He just got it. He was just one of those guys that just got it all, loved it all, took it all in. And probably in the back of his mind said, I'm not going to make it to big leagues, but I'm going to have a lot of damn fun going up there. And then Danny Mendick, with Mendick, I always, first time I get a roster, I look for guys from New York where I'm from. And Danny played up in Rochester, and I knew the area a little bit. And he was a ball player you could fall in love with because he was not a prospect, but played the game hard, and he started putting up big numbers at shortstop. Our elite shortstop was Tim Anderson, but Danny, I should say, broke a lot of his records, hit more home runs, and I don't know the batting average, but he did almost toe for toe Danny Mendick with Tim Anderson, and Danny came with a lot less publicity about him, and he was never really a prospect. So we were thrilled he got to the big leagues last year with the Mets and then re-signed with the White Sox, where he's playing every day in Charlotte this year.
That's great to hear. Do you make friends with these guys? Are there times where you bond with them a little bit? Are you kind of doing your thing and they're doing theirs?
It was easier when I traveled because you're on a bus with them and you are eating at the same Waffle House at 1:30 in the morning. You know, and easily, the harder you work, the harder they see that, and then you get accepted. Now, since the pandemic, I should say, I have not traveled. So it's a little harder. And you just rely on who you are to make that connection. And you better be passionate. You better get downstairs, show your face, work a little harder. Because the pandemic really changed everything and took away my one-on-one friendships. And now it's, you go through a whole season and maybe recognize five of your 25 guys, you know? So a little bit, the word would be challenging, definitely a little bit more challenging.
Well, Kurt, just a couple more questions. I don't want to keep you all day, although in a perfect world, I'd love to. How about some of the standout games, like the first Barons no-hitter, I guess, since maybe the 60s, is Luis Andujar, August 8th, 1995.
And one of my favorites. Yeah, it was a hot summer night up in Memphis. The Barons were neck and neck in a pennant race with Chattanooga, and it was a 1-0 game where Andujar struck out the side in order in the ninth inning. And the last guy he faced would go on to have a decent big league career in Homer Bush. And I get asked, and it's the most single exciting game that I've called. You've got your championships, wow, and you got your Jordan year, but for single game enthusiasm and the what was on the line, that was an amazing amazing game to call and be a part of.
And then Frankie Montas
threw no hitter,
a 7-inning no hitter.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we still had another game. That was the front end of a doubleheader. I did run down with my camera. I did take a couple of pictures. Frankie's a really, really good guy. Happy to see him resurrecting his career with the Reds. But it just didn't have the same style points as Andujar because, heck, we had another game to play that night. I don't remember if we won it or not, but he throws the no-hitter. And I did whatever I could. You know, typically, and then in the back of my mind, besides that, we had another game. And in the back of my mind, he was six out short of nine, and that's what I grew up with nine. You know, so
right.
But still really cool, complete game, didn't need any help. You know, I've done a bunch of combined no hitters, and I'll tell you the truth, you got a fake enthusiasm. I know I did.
A couple other unique games. This one not so long ago, August 2018, the Barons. You don't hear about this in the major leagues very often, anywhere in baseball. They hit two grand slams in the ninth inning against the Montgomery Biscuits. They went 18-2.
Yeah, in Montgomery. Set, believe, I know we did. We set a franchise record, 7 home runs in that game, 2 grand slams. It was batting practice that day. It was, you know, one of those freak games over 140 that you'll have something like that where just everything clicks. Hot night down in Montgomery. Ball was traveling.
And then how about some of the games finally with, it's going on 16 innings, 17 innings. This is a Tuesday night, or it's a getaway night, and you're like, we're heading to Jacksonville for a game tomorrow, or however it plays out. How are you handling those late nights? Can somebody scratch across a run, please, so I can go home? My wife made dinner, or what? It's the lights are off at home. Everybody's asleep. Is that?
we had a day game in Chattanooga that turned into a night game. 21 innings, and this again before the ghost runner rule. And you know, you definitely get to a point. I know I did. I can't speak for Larry Ward of Chattanooga. I wanted to set a record. If we're going to go that long, let's keep going. Let's go to the 29th, the 35th. Let's get on. You know, the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Rochester Red Wings had the most famous game, 33 innings, in the history of minor league baseball. And that's what I was gunning for. I was like, let's go. Let's put them in the rearview mirror. Unfortunately, it stopped in the 21st, which is doing a doubleheader and then some by yourself on the road.
Let's have a utility infielder throwing 5 innings of off-speed pitches.
Yeah,
we did. Yep. Kurt, this has been a blast. You know, it could go on and on here. How about just a goofy question? I love these questions that people never get asked because I want this show to be fun. So when you were traveling with the team and you guys are stopping, you're eating in the middle of the night, I got to ask in general because I struggle with this. Where would you put your proficiency level with motion-activated hand or hand towel or soap dispensers and all those little rest stop bathrooms? I'm pretty bad at it. But how do you do in those situations? You're trying to just get in and out, and why won't the paper towels come out?
No, at 2 o'clock in the morning when we stop on these long road trips, you're going to the bathroom first. We have a line of 16 guys in the bathroom. Wash, soap up, dry hand, you know, and then you're just attacking the Snickers bar, the Twizzlers, the Reese's Pieces. Guys would have pizza. They would have sandwiches, big bags of chips, whatever it was. And so within 5 minutes, you know, when Rick pulled that bus over, 5 minutes, everyone gets out. You just first to the bathroom, then you're destroying the candy rack and food and amenities. And then typically you're going to get one or two guys trying on the cowboy hats, trying on the vests and the belts and all that kind of stuff too, which is funny at the time, but, you look back on it, I've seen enough of those.
Yeah. That people forget that we didn't have these, Bucky stations and these luxury, it was Stuckey's, and that was a nice place back then.
Yeah. We were lucky. Yeah.
Right. Well, Kurt, it's another exciting season here. Barron's Baseball, I'm so happy that you're still a part of it. And going back to the top of the episode, folks, enjoy the Kurt Bloom experience with the Barons as long as you can. We've been so fortunate to have you these many years. And I gotta just reinforce that you are a part of the fabric of baseball in Birmingham, forever a part of the legacy and the lore of the Birmingham Barons.
Humbling. That's really very kind and honest, or not kind and honest, but kind of and very flattering. And I'm just lucky. I'm blessed. I love it. And I can do it again tomorrow, you know, same time. Keep talking about baseball. Keep talking about the Barons. And it's a blessing. And I thank you. I thank the city of Birmingham for welcoming me in to their kitchens and living rooms for the last 33 years. And if you want more, go to KurtBloom.com, and there's more Jordan stuff there, more of my other work and my teaching at Birmingham Southern and all that stuff. So it's all there. But I appreciate the opportunity, Dan, and I'm just so glad that we could get together and knock this thing out and, you know, be a part of the fabric.
You got it, Kurt. I want to real quick, before I forget, because these guys were important to me in my short time at the Birmingham News. But class of 2008, Reuben Grant, Birmingham Barons Hall of Fame.
Ben, Hall of Famer.
Ben Cook. What a presence. Ben
just
Cook.
Passed away. He was on radio with me. Yeah.
God rest him. Wayne Martin.
Wayne Martin is still alive and a Hall of Famer. I see his son Grant often at games, basketball games. I always put in a good word for Wayne. Wayne and Reuben were kind of like my older uncles when I first started, because they were the beat writers for years before I even got there. So they took me under their wing, and we had a great time with those guys. Had one great time. I miss that. I miss those days a lot.
Well, thanks for everything you do, Kurt. And remember, folks, Kurt Bloom, that's C-U-R-T, Bloom.com. Check out All Corners, that website. Relive some of those moments. It has been such an honor having you on the show today, Kurt.
Well, Dan, thank you very much. And I would just end it by saying bless you and bless your audience. And thank you. Have a great day.
All right, folks. And remember, you always have a chance, no matter what you're doing. If you're involved in baseball, or if you work as a mechanic somewhere, you are important. You can make somebody's day a little brighter, and you never know. They might remember it for 15, 16 years, like I did, thanks to Kurt. Best of luck to you, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Kurt Bloom.